To understand the events in Paris on Friday evening, the acts of terror unleashed on the City of Lights have been claimed by some to be a work against infidelity, against an ancient moral code, against modernity itself. But the criminality of these acts against humanity I hold as self-evident. In the face of such horror, what is there for any people to do? On Friday, for safety's sake, people in Paris were asked to stay inside. When I texted our own member, Nancy West, she responded that she was already in bed when the bombings began. She heard the commotion outside, but was otherwise unaffected. She stayed put with her friends in the hotel, listened to warnings. She stayed put. Staying put can be an act of courage when otherwise people might want to flee. This congregation made a choice years ago to stay put. Decades ago, when Baltimore was in an uproar after the killing of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., this congregation stayed put. It was an act of courage. We keep staying put when we meet Sunday after Sunday and reaffirm our confidence in the liberal religion we practice. We keep staying put when we think together about our future and the role a religious education program plays in our lives, in the growing of our souls, and in growing the souls of our children and youth. We keep staying put when we care for this building as we are, bit by bit, staying put again and again. The repairs to the Hamilton Street stairs, which were accomplished a few weeks ago, and yes, you may use them today. The replacement of the hand railings on the Charles Street stairs going on this month, and please avoid those stairs if you need a handrail. The replacement of our sound system with 21st century equipment that will allow us to use the space more flexibly and share our message more effectively. A plan approved by our board with a fundraising mechanism to come before our membership in a special meeting next Sunday after church. All this is part of our courage. All this is part of our staying put. But the question remains, how do we make sense of senseless acts? In the Swedish romance novel and later film, My Life as a Dog, young Ingemar balances the losses in his life, which seem so overwhelming to him, with all the instances he can think of people who have suffered from accidents and others who knew intentional cruelty. He balances his losses against those of others to find some kind of solace. It's like Tevye de Milkeker in the stories of Shalom Aleichem and in Fiddler on the Roof on Broadway stage and the silver screen. On the one hand, he says, and he spins out a folksy and theological explanation, and on the other hand, he finds some darker and more difficult explanation, something about which he will argue with God. But the moment comes when he says, on the other hand, no, there is no other hand. The state of the world, divided by colonialism and its remnant, creating pockets of injustice and anxiety and poverty, can lead to a place where heinous acts against humanity may be considered, and there is no other hand. Suicide bombings and random shootings of people in cafes and holding concertgoers hostage before killing them. There is no other hand. These crimes without defense are acts against humanity. What saddens me is that these crimes are committed in the name of God, that religion has been used as a pretext for unspeakable acts against humanity and against all of creation, is the legacy of an understanding that life is structured in hierarchies where God is above us and we ourselves are in layers where some have dominance over others. Liberal religion, like ours, seeks to see rather that systems are interrelated and interdependent rather than hierarchical. And as this is true for the universe we live in, it ought to be true in the religion we practice. It was our foremother, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who taught that the first step in the elevation of women under all systems of religion is to convince them that the great spirit of the universe is in no way responsible for any of these absurdities. We are called in this religion to look beyond the absurdities and to realize what is inescapably true. We affirm the interconnectedness of all, the interdependence of all existence, which we are not above, but of which we are a part, and which we respect, and which I, for myself, revere. We know that we are, in the words of Unitarian Universalist songwriter Pat Humphreys, swimming in the stream together, some in power, some in pain. Power and pain are parts of life, all of our lives. None of us is exempt from pain, and all of us have access to power. There are times when each of us knows our capacity, our ability to get things done, our facility in exhibiting courage, but of doing more too than just staying put. We have the power to reach in and find a strength, some learned by pain that we have experienced and the lessons we have taken from those moments of pain. We reach in and find our strength, and we reach out to those who have experienced their own pain, faced other challenges, not ours, strengthened by their own capacity to make meaning of their lives, including their pain, and to act beyond their sorrow. We reach in, we reach out, and as a community, we welcome in and we embrace those who are exiled by hierarchical power. In a day, the women, the majority of our religion and the majority of the world, who are held back by systems of patriarchy and male chauvinism and social bias, at a time, we embraced those who were exiled by sexual orientation, inviting those among us who are lesbian and gay and bisexual to be full members of this community, to be full leaders of this congregation, to be allies in the social struggles inside and outside of these walls. In this week, in a tradition that started shortly after I arrived in Baltimore, we mark the Transgender Day of Remembrance on Friday with a special service that happens in our home. I don't know if you know how meaningful it is for the transgender allies, many of whom have been injured by religion, to come into this place of welcome, and not a place of welcome that doesn't feel like a church. You can't get away from the fact that it feels like we're inside something Catholic or Episcopalian or something. But for people who have been injured by religion to come into this place and to light candles, to listen to our organ, to have choirs sing for them and with them, and to be lifted up, to be embraced and held to the full humanity that they have and all that they possess, it's meaningful for them, and it's meaningful for us, that we may reach out and welcome and fully embrace the transgender and gender variant and non-conforming people whose full humanity is yet to be understood by the world. And as we know that we are part of that same world, we allow that we might not yet fully understand. And yet our faith calls us to embrace the exile, that we may bring ourselves, our power, our pain, into a relationship with the other. Now, it's important to know trans people have complained that the Transgender Day of Remembrance can limit people's perceptions of the vitality of trans lives, that beyond recognition of the pain of the community, it is important that we all understand the strength of the community. As well, we should know these people not just as victims, but as agents, powerful agents of their own lives. And so it is so wonderful that the trans community of Baltimore, led by trans people of color, will actually hold a march on Friday, which you're all welcome to, beginning at 4 o'clock up at St. Paul and North Avenue. Marching down St. Paul Street and coming to City Hall. They call it the Transgender March of Resilience. Members of that resilient team will then carry flames from their candlelight vigil into that chalice. Their pain and their power will embrace us and illumine our time together. Next Sunday, 2 members of our community will march to remember the first anniversary of the shooting of Tamir Rice, the boy in Cleveland, Ohio, who was shot by police while brandishing a plastic toy gun on a playground. Organizers of a march to remember Tamir met in Enoch Pratt Parish Hall, met in our community because this was a safe space of welcome for them to make their plans. Our church is a place where they know that they are embraced. They know that we will accompany them faithfully. High school students of Baltimore are taking the lead next week. They will call for greater accountability by our own police and judicial system. And the Willis family will share the story of the killing by the Baltimore police of their 14-year-old son, Kevin Cooper, nearly a decade ago. The pain of these families, the power of their protest, demand that we embrace them. There are so few words of solace that can adequately meet the pain that abounds in our world, in our community, even in our church, and maybe even in our hearts. We are called by our ethical, moral, and democratic religion to the greater good. Beyond our speeches, we are called to be present, to walk with people on their journeys, to celebrate the fullness of their humanity and our own, and to embrace them, especially as they feel in exile.